Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Episode 69, Season 3, the Daily Intermission Podcast. I'm on the road. I'm in a hotel room right now. We got Justin in Thunder Bay. Justin, what is going on? We've had massive news that it's sports world's buzzing. It feels like it's been a year since we chatted. What's going on?
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, the sports world is obviously we're getting into finals of some things, but obviously some big news coming around too. It's just you're getting a little bit from everywhere right now, and some big things from some places, but we'll get into it. But yeah, again, just weather's unreal. Golfing, fishing, working, and just great sports. So it's just a fun time. You've been on the road. Fill us in with this guy's road trip going on.
Yeah, it's been a big roadie. I started off last Wednesday, so I guess almost a week ago, and I traveled down to Southern Maine. I was visiting my uncle. Shout out to Peter; he listens to the pod. And got to spend some time at Old Orchard Beach, which is just a fantastic area in Maine. It's a beautiful beach. It's such a hub. It feels like California, and I know people are going to laugh at me for saying that, but the beaches are so nice. Yeah, you get the bikinis, the volleyball, the bars on the beach. It's just a tremendous spot. And dude, I teed it up at a Donald Ross course and I put on an absolute clinic. I hate pumping my own tires, man. But Justin, let me tell you about this round.
Yeah. You had an insane back nine, right? You were putting it up there.
So I get there and I've played this course a lot. My second home course. Like I've played it a lot. It's a very tough track. It's not very long, but the golf greens, if people are familiar with Donald Ross, he's a very famous designer. I mean, Oak Hill, where they played the PGA Championships, that's Donald Ross.
There you
go. So like the green complexes are just insane. Like it's an incredible track. So people who know me know I like to have a beer before my round. So I'm drinking my beer before the round, and I have a couple during the round. It really loosens me up. It dials me in. And for people who haven't tried it, I'd recommend it. It loosens you up. So I get out there, and I'm on fire. I'm hitting green, every green in regulation. I'm putting it between 10 and 15 feet, and I can't hit a putt.
I can't hit a putt.
And so, like, these guys that I'm playing with, they're like, man, this guy's locked in. And I'm like, I'm playing today. Like, I got a score coming. But I can't make a putt, man. So I make I'm one over through eight holes, and I'm just shaking my head. I'm like, I could be three under right now. And I go on the ninth hole. It's a really long par four, and I blow it over the green. Can't get up and down. Make double bogey on the ninth hole. No, I'm plus three, and I've just hit the ball, Justin, like the best I've ever in my life. I'm like, this is just ridiculous.
Oh my god.
So fast forward to the back nine, and there's another short par four, the 15th hole. I guess the 15th I guess the 14th and I make a terrible bogey and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm ready to leave the golf course.
Yeah.
Get to the 15th, chuck a dart, tap it in for birdie. Now the juices are flowing. I finally made a putt. I get to the 16th. I drive it in the woods. I chip in from the woods for eagle. Okay. Boom. 302 holes. We get to the par five, 17th. I put it in close on I just missed the green in two, chipped it up close, missed the putt. On the 18th, coming in at right now, I'm two over. You know, I'm feeling a bit better about my day, and I roll in about a 50 footer for birdie on 18 to go four under
Come
on the last.
Come on.
Yeah, man, it was just one of those days, and it's just such a funny game like that. Like I'm pure in it for the first 15 holes, didn't get anything. And then just absolutely come into the house on fire. It was unbelievable. I was walking around the clubhouse like I was Roy Mathis. It was incredible.
That's actually insane. Unbelievable. Yeah. And just for the listeners that aren't major golf fans, the chuck a dart is not – that's a tight shot. He's not he's not full John Daly.
Yes, no,
cigarettes and drinking a beer and turn the round around. Yeah, yeah, but yeah. That's unreal. What, like I said, hey, Greg throws it up there on the socials. over under on the card. You've been under every time lately. I say, hey, I'm going over this time. Next thing I see is that finish you had, and you just stuck it to me and the people that voted it. It was it was an impressive card, to say the least, to look at that finish.
Yeah, I don't know what I think. I got a game coming up this week, Justin, a TPC Osprey Toronto. That could be an over under, like
nice.
It could be like an over under, like 82, 83. Like we'll tip it out with a good friend of mine. But then I made it up to Quebec, crossed the border, but another 4-hour drive, and now I'm in Montreal. Going to be nice, heading into Toronto in the next couple of days. So the trip's been fantastic, but what's going on in your world, man? How you been?
No, that's sick. Yeah, we've been great, man. So we're in the midst, one of the hottest summers I remembered in a while. Like I've been saying it to you for a little while now, but it's like hitting a point. It's hot every single day, sun shining. Like I said, I've been playing golf, working and stuff. We started skating for hockey. We got a little 3-on-3 a session we do Monday nights with the college guys here, so that's a lot of fun. But getting the fishing, first fishing trip was last weekend, just about hour and a half outside of town here, so nothing major. I didn't catch anything. We only caught like 3. It was a quick one just in the morning. We went back by noon anyways, but we're going out again this Saturday. That's a fun one. We got 5 of us there. We split into 2 sides, kind of see what the count is, a little fishing competition, just enjoying the fellas though at the end of the day, unreal weather. So just been enjoying the weather, because it's been an incredible heat wave we've had. So kind of just taking it all in here for me.
So are we talking like 30s every day?
Yeah, so we've been
in Fahrenheit.
No, I'm in Celsius. Luckily, okay. I'm in Celsius. We've been 25 to like 28 every day. Oh. So it's that hot in the sun. But it's not that like bad 30. Like you get up there where it's like uncomfortable. That's the thing.
So like, that's like 80s. Yeah. For the American listeners, that's like
in
the 80s.
Yes, it's like the 80s with sunshine and no humidity. So it's actually just been money. Like perfect right now. Got in the lake for a swim and stuff like that. So like, and the biggest thing is in the mornings, like we're sitting at 15 to 18 in the morning, so it's just like nice and comfy right from the second the day starts, which is awesome. But yeah, that's it for me. Just been kind of enjoying things, so laying low, which is nice.
I love it, man. Well, it's been, well, we got to get into this. It has been maybe the most monumental day in the history of golf. We'll get into quarter one here. It's episode 69, season 3 of the Daily Nutrition Podcast. Justin Paul, Greg Brown. So I was in a group chat this morning, and somebody mentioned that the PGA Tour and LIV Tour, and throw in the DP World Tour, are merging. Yep. And I was like, what? Excuse me? Like, that's not happening.
Yep.
This is the most coward, most – I don't even know how to explain what Jay Monahan has done here. You can look through the past year of his press conferences – him talking about the 9/11 victims' families and the moral victory of staying on the PGA Tour because of where the money's coming from on the LIV Tour, and then now getting to bed with them and to merge with them. It's hypocrisy at its highest degree. I cannot believe this is happening.
It's an understatement, to say the least, and how just unbelievable how 180 of a turn they took. I mean, money talks. Let's first of all, let's call a spade a spade. Money absolutely talks here for Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour. This is a situation where you can look at some different factors that pushed them into this. I want to say Koepka winning, I think that was a factor for sure, winning the major there. I think that plays an element. I want to ask you this too. We've seen Benzema, Ronaldo, Messi, they go to the Saudi League in soccer. I'm starting to think here that Jay Monahan maybe didn't see a path for a ceiling or maybe the growth that the PGA wanted to have. And then all of a sudden the Saudis are just coming to them with money and bags of money, I'm sure. And Monahan just said, you know what? I'm going to have to try to take this on the chin, which he expected this. But in terms of sports world, this is one every, I don't even know how long of a day and just a mob of fans everywhere calling him out for what it is, and it's an absolute 180 turn, and he absolutely buried some of his best people and best faces in terms of the players at the tour. It's unbelievable. I mean, here, I'm going to go through the numbers. I'm turning to you here.
Yep.
These are the, so for people that maybe don't have a full grasp on what's going on, maybe they're not full golf listeners. About a year ago, correct me if I'm wrong at any point, about a year ago, just over
exactly
a year ago.
The
Saudi Investment Fund, as they term it, starts the LIV Golf League, and it's going to be extracting players from the PGA Tour, and they paid these guys hundreds of millions of dollars to come. Some top names, Brooke Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Phil Mickelson, and these players took so much heat and so much hate for leaving because of what the Saudi regime stands for and what they've done. And they PGA had Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Zalatoris, Matsuyama, Homa. These guys stay firm because they trashed the decision made and the whole sport inside. Tiger Woods said no to $800 million plus, almost a billion. It could have been. We don't know the exact amount. Zalatoris, not a perennial winner by any means, not a money loaded guy from the tour at any means, $150 million plus. Matsuyama, $400 million plus. And Rory McIlroy easily over $500 million. And now these LIV players who accepted that money, went on the LIV tour, came back to play in majors. Koepka won a major still, is now being possibly told. I mean, it's almost certain here we're looking at with the merger. It is. In some sort of fashion, they are now just going to be a collective tour again. And they're these guys that were the face and stood up for Monahan, all this, just basically picked the wrong side and gave up generational wealth, to say the least.
Yeah, that's going to be, you know, first and foremost, how do you compensate the guys that stayed loyal to the PGA Tour? It's got to be the
number. Do you think they
will? Yes, they have to. You can't not compensate guys like Rory and Hideki Matsuyama. They knew, I mean, he was offered almost $400 million. They knew that with Hideki comes the market of Japan, who loves sports. The entire country will follow. So you know what this comes down to, Justin? And obviously we're not privy to much information. Nobody is. Not a lot has come out about this deal, what it's going to look like. But the PGA Tour has 17 elevated events this year. They're paying their winners over $4 million for these 17 elevated events. You know what I think? I think the PGA Tour is hurting. I don't think they had the money. Yeah. I think they were looking and going, they were looking at the model and going, we can't sustain this. We can't compete with this. And Jay Monahan sat down with the Saudis and said, we need you guys. They have unlimited resources and they needed the money. And it contradicts everything that he said for the past year, but money talks, and they couldn't compete with the LIV money, and they needed
And I agree. And I think this is almost a nail in the coffin. I don't want to say that this was a turning point. We don't know this information, but Brooks Koepka winning the major validated the LIV tour to me. I think I don't think it's crazy to think that him winning the PGA championship absolutely moved a little bit of probably a good chunk of fans to say, oh, the LIV tour isn't much of a joke as we thought. And not only that, for Monahan to probably be watching the majors and saying, oh my God, Phil Mickelson is getting cheered for. Koepka's got his fans too. Like, starting to kind of, I wonder, think that like maybe this whole Saudi reputation and image that we tried to enforce as well, they definitely were, isn't staying with these fans as much as we thought. And it's kind of blown over to a degree. And I bring up soccer. And the reason I bring up soccer, because I do think it's a little bit important, is Monahan saying to himself, we took the wrong stance by trashing the Saudi regime and being so anti-Saudi that we could have been like these soccer guys and all these other sports that are cashing in on the Saudis. And he wishes he could just turn back the clock. And now he is, and basically saying, hey, we're like every other sport here. They're going to be a part of it, and they have all this money. We're going to take it. But it's not going to work that way, because all the footage that is now out there today, if you go on Twitter, just search up PGA, LIV, Monahan, whatever you want, you will see how many times Monahan adamantly said he was sitting there with Jim Nantz, and he brought up the 9/11 and everything, and just went after basically anyone who had anything positive to say, let alone join like they did the LIV Tour.
Yeah, well, the one thing I hope for is that the LIV model is not going to work. I know that for sure. The 3-day shotgun starts, reduced 40, that's not compelling. That's not going to work. That's not how golf works. That's like saying we're going to change hockey to 2 periods and 3-on-3. It's just not how it's going to work. You have to stay traditional with the 4-day tournament cuts. But We have no idea what this is going to look like. We have no information. We have no idea, but these elevated events are going to be played for a lot more money. And yeah, the Saudis are willing to just, they're just, they've got the deepest pockets in the world in sports. We're seeing it all over. You bring up Messi and Ronaldo. They don't just go grab the two biggest athletes in the world, yeah, bring them over to their country if they don't have money. These guys have money and they're willing to spend it on the game of golf. And I think at the end, it's going to be good. I'm happy just due to the fact that we are going to have all of the best players in the world back in single tournaments.
Yeah.
But what this is just the beginning. We have no idea what this is going to look like.
We got two things. So first, I'm hearing that the team format is not only still in play, but something that it sounds like the LIV doesn't just want to go swept under the rug and we're all just back to PGA with LIV being an investor. I'm hearing that there's serious considerations for the team element still. What do you think? I don't know that I hate that idea. I got to say,
golf's not a team game.
I know, and there's still resentment because LIV started.
Brooks Koepka's name goes on the Wanamaker Trophy as Brooks Koepka.
And I don't disagree with that. And why can't that still be true? Same with FedEx could still be true because FedEx is like a whole season thing. What if the team thing was purely I don't want the team celebrating with Koepka when he wins the PGA Championship. I'm not saying that. I don't want six guys getting green jackets at the Masters. But at the very end of the season, if the last tournament, say, is something that's a different point set up where it's going to decide the team race, I can't say that I'm going to hate that element where they get points throughout the entire season in different tournaments and they're all individual. But at the end of the year, yeah, one team maybe gathered more points than the other. I don't know how that all work, but I can't say that I don't hate a little more of a wrinkle in the golf world like that.
Yeah, it's hard for me to get. I just can't wrap my head around it. I'm just such a traditionalist and I've been such a diehard golf fan that it's hard for me to wrap my head around how the, you know, what that will look like and how they'll be able to implement that. But yeah, I mean, if you want to pair four guys or six guys or whatever and have them on a team and you know, their results kind of accumulate points to a season long race, and if you can get sponsorship money, have teams sponsored and things of that nature. But I don't know. I don't know what it's going to look like. I would assume what it sounds like is the PGA Tour has been invested in, that the Saudis have purchased a massive stake in the PGA Tour. What's interesting, too, is that they're a non-for-profit organization. But another thing, too, is worth bringing up, Justin, is that these two were in a class action lawsuit.
Yeah.
And we were about to be privy to information that I don't think the PGA Tour was too happy about, too fond about, but they were going to open up their books. They were going to show where some of this money's been going. And I don't think that Jay Monahan wanted that at all. There's so many moving parts. This is just such groundbreaking news today. I don't know where we're headed, but obviously
I'm going to throw something out there. I don't know if this is true. I just want to get your take on it, whether you know anything or not. You say open up the books and you say where the money's going to. Where's the money coming from? Is there not a couple tours that they go to some interesting places that may be paying a handsome sum to get one tournament, and it still might be a large part of their money gathering for the year, even if it's only one tournament? Pretty sure they go to China and Dubai, or they have in the past.
They do, yeah.
So I don't know that we could rule out that they were completely squeaky clean in terms of what they get for money.
I don't think they wanted their books to be opened up. I don't think that they wanted this lawsuit. And you know what? In the end, there's some winners in this. I think Phil Mickelson's a major winner in this. Like, this guy, he put his neck on the line, and the losers, man, the Rory McIlroys, the Tiger Woods, the Jordan Spieth, the Justin Thomas, these guys who just turned down $500 million. And now they see all these guys who have just made generational wealth. And now they're coming back to the PGA Tour with no consequences. It's very interesting. It's just the tip of the iceberg, what we're privy to right now, but it's going to be exciting news to break down with the weeks to come. And you have to feel for the Canadian Open, because last year was the first live event during the Canadian Open. And now, during the Canadian Open week, our national tournament, they break this news today. Like, what a fuck you to Canada.
It's true. I mean, we're going to see Rory here. I got asked this. We got asked this question, and it came up before. If you're Rory or some of these guys, do you consider retiring? I can't see it, because obviously it would look soft and weak. I know I can understand the sentiment, but I think the best way to do any revenge or anything you do, not retire, come out and win two or three events and win the next major. I think that's what you got to be doing if you're Rory. And he was a big voice against this too. He is due for a little bit of a run here. And he had a great showing last tournament. Let's not forget that.
Absolutely. He was right there. He was knocking on the door. We'll mention. Congrats to Victor Hovland, who has been knocking at the door and outlast Danny McCarthy at Jack's tournament at the Memorial. So congrats to Victor Hovland. I'm sure all of you guys caught that on Sunday. But yeah, I mean, this is going to be very noisy. It's going to be very noisy over the next 2 weeks, kind of hashing out what this is going to look like. Obviously, we have all the players next week at the U.S. Open in Los Angeles. And I'm sure there will be a lot of chatter. All the press conferences that we get for the next 2 weeks will all be centered around this merger and what it's going to look like. But this isn't going anywhere. But I mean, it's unbelievable news. It's the most revolutionary day in the history of golf. And we'll see. I guess I should mention too, Justin, we'll get out of the live talk because we don't have a ton of information, but those are our initial thoughts. Rose Zhang. Rose Zhang on the LPGA Tour. She won the women's amateur at Augusta National this year. 2 weeks ago at the NCAA Championships from Stanford won, and now she becomes the first ever professional golfer in her first professional start to win her first start. Rose Zhang teed it up at Liberty National and won.
Yeah. Stop. Are you
unbelievable?
Are we seeing the next domination for female golf right here?
We certainly could. It has a lot of Tiger vibes because she's a Stanford grad. She's a phenomenal player, won her in a playoff. And to tee it up in your first event and go out there and win, beat the likes of Nelly Korda and Brooke Henderson and Lydia Ko and win in a playoff, you know, just on your first ever, you know, event, it's just unbelievable. Rose Zhang.
Unbelievable. Hey, something to keep an eye on for sure. Wouldn't mind seeing a Tiger Woods-like female on the tour just dominating. So definitely something to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. Would be amazing. But let's move into the Canadian Open this week. Obviously, we're at Oakdale, another Stanley Thompson course just north of the city of Toronto. It's going to be exciting. I'll have boots on the ground Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'll be doing my best to get some content and just really check out that golf course. But, you know, it's going to be noisy, like we said. There's going to be a lot of news surrounding this merger. But we do have a golf tournament to play, Justin.
Yeah, we do.
I mean, just initial thoughts. I mean, we have to look at our Canadians. There's going to be a lot in the field. I should shout out Miles Creighton, a guy from Digby, Nova Scotia, a very rural area in Nova Scotia. He won last week on the Latin American Tour, 19 under, which is a PGA Tour feeder league. He'll be at event. It's going to be exciting. So, I mean, do we think there's a chance that a guy like Mackenzie Hughes, a guy like Corey Connors, who showed out so well at the PGA Championship, a guy like Adam Hadwin, is it a time for a Canadian to win the PGA or the RBC Canadian Open?
I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, that's something that, like I said, I was talking about it, last week with Block and stuff. I the best thing for this would be a Canadian in the mix. Like, we have some of these guys on the American Tour. When they're in, like, California and stuff, you're cheering for certain guys who are locals at the course. I promise you, anybody who's not from Canada or anyone who's unsure or hasn't seen maybe a Canadian crowd in their element, if there is a Canadian in the mix on Sunday at this event, are going to see a fan base at this golf course who is going to be going absolutely bananas. Like, the pride for a Canadian to be winning would be absolutely electric. I don't hate a Hadwin. That's if I'm picking my Canadian, I'm going with Hadwin. I know Connor's been great lately. I'm pretty sure Hadwin had a great showing here last time. And he's one that I think could absolutely pull it off here. So that's who I'm leaning to. I'm not saying that's my number one pick for this tournament overall. But for Canadians, it's going to be Connors, Hadwin, and Pendrith for me. Those are the three that I think have a legitimate chance of winning.
Yeah, I think so. I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we'll throw in Adam Svensson. We've had three players on the PGA Tour win this season with Corey Connors, Matt Hughes, and Adam Svensson. They've all won on the tour. It's the first time in the history where three different Canadians have won. So, I mean, it's probably been the healthiest place that Canadian golf has been on the PGA Tour. But, I mean, let's get right into it for picks. I mean, I look at the field, and it is fairly strong. I mean, we do have a lot of names that a lot of people will be familiar with. The golf course is going to be – it's going to demand a lot of fairways hit. I mean, like Justin said, Canadian fans are crazy. And if you don't think that we take this seriously, Rory mentioned it last year at the tournament, it's a major feel. This is our golf tournament. This is our National Open. We all know how crazy Canadian fans are in sports. This is our National Open. It's going to feel like a major, and it's going to play like a major.
Yeah,
it's not going to score. It's not going to score like a major. I expect them to climb into the 20s, 20 under. But I'm looking at Roy McIlroy at plus 500. We won't give him out as a best bet, but to have the hat trick, three in a row. Yeah.
Wow.
He won in Hamilton in 2019. I guess it was 2020 he won in Hamilton. In 2021, it was canceled due to COVID. And then in 2020 last year, he won at St. George's. He's looking to make it three in a row. I really like Rory at plus 500. I think we saw last week his game's in a good place. He struggled on Sunday at a really tough Muirfield Village. But I think Rory McIlroy, I don't think we can look past him at this week. I think he's got a good chance at going three in a row here.
Yeah, and I think with Rory, like, he's playing such great golf, knows the course so well. And I mean, let's call a spade. Like, he's the best player in this field. Like, he's not dealing with Scheffler. He's not dealing with Ram. Like, Rory is the man to beat. Finau's not in this, and he would have been one to keep an eye on because he had an unbelievable showing as well. But I think a threat, obviously we touched on Rory, but a threat for me to Rory is Sam Burns. Good two showings lately with a 16th and a tied for sixth. I mean, golf's a touch game. I'm not going to sit here and say that everyone who's on a roll it stays on a roll. But Sam Burns, I think he's been playing actually sneaky good golf. We've had him in a couple of our best bets there. And I'm looking at him 26 years old. This is a guy that I think could keep up with Rory. And I think that's what you got to look at when you're looking at this. Can you see this guy getting out to a lead that Rory can't chase him down? That's who I'm looking at. I mean, do you have any dark horses that you're saying you might snipe here or throw a dart at?
Yeah, a couple of mid-range guys here that I like are two Brits, two guys from England. I like Justin Rose and Tommy Fleetwood. Justin Rose last year, I think he shot 7-under on Sunday to come runner-up at this tournament. Justin Rose is a guy, he's been playing very well. He's a very accurate guy. I like Justin Rose and Tommy Fleetwood, a guy we've seen play well in the past. He's looking for his first win on the PGA Tour. I like Tommy Fleetwood as well. So Justin Rose, he can get a plus 1,800 and Tommy Fleetwood a plus 2,500. Sahith Tagala is another guy at plus 3,000. He's the guy looking for his first win on the PGA Tour. We all know how electric Sahith is. So I do like Sahith, but I mean, looking at the bombs, I mean, you mentioned Taylor Pendrith at plus 8,000 is a guy that, you know, a Canadian that could definitely get in the mix. Lee Hodges has played fairly well as of late. He's plus 110,000.
Here's some names. This is last year's leaderboard here from the Canadian Open. I'm going to throw some names at you. You tell me if you like something for value or anything like that. We got Rory, obviously, at the top. Sam Burns came T4. He was outside those three that were in that mix right to the very end. Justin Rose right there, T4. Connor's at six. Wyndham Clark, Kirk, Matthew Fitzpatrick came T10 last year. Okay. Shane Lowry. I mean, like, this was a tournament where obviously you remember the top names are all up there. But yeah, I mean, Connors, hey, when you look back at it, man, I mean, a sixth place finish.
And how well he's playing. He does seem like he's got the most game out of the Canadians right now. He's the best, I think, you know, head to head. And you can get Connors at plus 1,800. The pressure is going to mount, and he dealt with that pressure at the PGA Championship. So we'll see. Maybe he can transfer that over to the Canadian Open. I do like Corey Connors at plus 1,800. But regardless, we'll have our picks out tomorrow, and we'll have those up and ready to go. But RBC Canadian Open week, it's going to be massive. Justin, let's move into the NHL quarter to a long-winded golf section there. But we do have the Stanley Cup going on. It's the Stanley Cup final right now. We just finished two games in Las Vegas. Game one, a 5-2 win with the Vegas Golden Knights. Empty netter. I mean, it seemed like Vegas had more step. They're such a deadly team. And the D are just, they're so gritty. They're so big. They play so well. The Shea Theodore and Alex Petrangelo, you can't say enough about them. Yeah. And those four lines that they roll, it's just, they're unbelievable, man. And they seem like they've got a lot of chemistry. Game two was an absolute blowout, Justin. 7-2. I mean, Bobrovsky gets pulled after four goals. And you know what? I revert back to thinking, you know, we talked about it. Is this big layoff going to affect him? It obviously affected Bobrovsky. He's not in the same rhythm. He's not feeling it. And if you're a team like Boston, a team like Toronto, a team like Carolina, you're looking at these games going, why didn't we get that Bobrovsky?
No, you're right. And that's what I was going to lead with is I was sitting here after game one thinking, okay, they had a big break. It was a 5-2 game. I want to say 5-2 flattered Vegas a little bit with the score in terms of how the game was competed. Yeah. And it was a little bit closer than that. I was thinking, hey, we had a lot of fights at the end. We had a lot of scrappy play towards the finish. Very clearly that Florida wasn't happy with the loss, but they wanted to make a statement for next game. I was thinking to myself, you know what? The rest versus rust factor came into play. Vegas got the win. I was thinking Bobrovsky's going to come out there, be back to his old self with obviously only the one-day regular break again. He kind of got his feet wet in game one, didn't get the win. And then I was also thinking, hey, like this Florida team's answered every time they've had to this playoffs. This isn't going to be any different. So I was kind of thinking Florida would be able to show a lot more than they did. But right from the get-go, like this wasn't close. Like this Vegas team with Marshall Show stepping up the way he is, it is massive. He got a goal in game one, 3 points in game two. And I call that out because what happens when you're on a playoff run? You have your Eichels, your Mark Stone, your Pietrangelo. Those are your stars. Those are your staples. The teams that go the deepest are the teams that have, I don't want to say depth, Marshall Show's still top six for them, but outside your superstars, you're having a guy step up that is like in the Conn Smythe race because he's playing that well above himself. He's not going to win Conn Smythe. There's a pretty late surge in the second half of the playoffs, but like this guy right now is the opportunistic player for this Vegas team that's kind of giving them that extra edge offensively. Like this is 5 goals and 7 goals on a Florida team that their whole thing was, we got a stone cold goaltender right now and you guys can't score on us.
That was kind of their equation, wasn't it? It was good, hard hockey, north-south hockey, but they had their Bobrovsky. If they got outplayed, it didn't matter. Yep. Yep. And now they get outplayed, it does matter. They're putting pucks in the back of the net. They're finding ways to beat Bobrovsky, and it just that formula that's been just walking through teams in the Eastern Conference hasn't been the formula. I mean, obviously, it's not over yet. The series isn't over until you lose at home, but it feels like
far from over.
Feels like Vegas is well, they certainly have a stranglehold on this series, and it feels like, I mean, you know, after watching those two games, it's like, how is Florida going to answer?
I'll tell you right now, where I stand is I think Florida wins both games of Florida. That's where I am coming into this, and I'll say for one reason, and people forget this, happens all the time, both sports, NBA and NHL. After a blowout, it's not as easy to respond for the team that blew them out than it is for the team that got blown out, and they're going home. So now you have a Vegas team who swept at home, feeling really high about themselves, just hammered Florida, which, like I said it before, you hammer a team like this, you don't necessarily have that mindset or that focus or that thinking of, hey, these guys are going to come at us or they're going to give us something we can't handle. And all that. Florida knows their back's up against the wall. They're playing more desperate. Hockey, that's a big factor. It's a lot of a intensity game. It's a lot of a outworking the opponent type of game. I absolutely think Florida wins at least one game. I think game three here, and this sounds chintzy. If Florida gets game three, I truly believe they are fully in this series as if it's a tied series. I really do. I think if they get game three, this series is turned on its head and momentum. Like I think the momentum Florida could get just from winning the first game is a lot more substantial than any momentum Vegas has had so far, because like you said, you're not out till you lose at home. So they are very much still in this playoffs. You don't just get to the finals out of luck. Like this is a very, very good team, good heads on their shoulders. I don't think this series is close to being over.
It's must win, do or die now, because if they lose this next game, you know, their backs are against the wall, being down 3-0. You got to win both at home, I think, if you're Florida. Yeah. Let's talk about that hit, man. I mean, first, let's talk about Barbashev. What an acquisition this guy was at the deadline. This guy is mean. He hits everything in his way. Ran over Gudas during that game, man.
Not an easy guy to run over.
It's not. He's going to get a nice little payday, man, because this guy's been an excellent acquisition for the Vegas Golden Knights, and I'm extremely impressed. I didn't know a lot about Barbashev, but, man, that guy can play. He plays a great brand of hockey. And Matthew Tkachuk, you got to feel bad for Jack Eichel. Jack Eichel, carelessly going out of his own zone, up the middle of the ice with his head down, and he could say he toe-picked all he wanted. He saw Matthew Tkachuk coming, and he just ate the hit. Like, he was like, uh-oh. Dove forward, and Matthew Tkachuk buried him.
He was airborne. Like, this hit was, like, for real, man. Like, you watch the replay in slow motion. Jack Eichel at the point of contact had nothing on the ice. He was almost fully Superman forward. And just, I don't know how his shoulder didn't go through the other side of his body. This guy got murdered by an absolute freight train. And Tkachuk was going in there to blow the guy up. And Jack Eichel served himself up on a platter to get just destroyed.
They got Matthew Tkachuk.
Literally Matthew Tkachuk. There was no contact to the head. And that helmet popped right off of Eichel. Right off of him. I don't know what discs... I don't know what disc or anything he got in his neck, fusion or whatever. They got to recheck it tonight. They have to.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so he got the wind knocked out of him. He ended up leaving the game briefly. But, yeah, Jack Eichel took a massive hit. So we got Vegas up 2-0, heading into Florida. Justin's not sold. This series is anywhere as close to over. I'm starting to lean like Vegas is going to clean this up. But we'll see. Hopefully Bobrovsky can find his game. Hopefully he can get things back on track. I think you go with Bobrovsky. I don't think you go Alex Lyon. Yeah, you go Bobrovsky.
Maurice was kind of hinting it was a little bit of a rest thing too that influenced the pull. I mean, I think it's you pull him to give your team a little bit of a bump and a little bit more motivation, a little wake up call. But yeah, the rest is also a factor. So I think it made sense to pull him. It's got to be Bobrovsky. It's got to be.
Absolutely. All right. Well, just some other news outside of the Stanley Cup final, Justin. It sounds like Mike Babcock. It will be re-entering the NHL. It sounds like Mike Babcock is going to be hired by the Columbus Blue Jackets. Very surprising, you know, here. I mean, obviously we know how it ended in Toronto. He got fired and a lot of dark stories came out about Mike Babcock. A lot of the NHL world really talking about just trashing the guy. Obviously we all know about the Mitch Marner story, about him bringing Mitch into the room, asking about who he thought the worst players on the team were, things of that nature, and him sharing that information with the team. Very weird interaction with the coach player. And then you got the Johan Franzens of the world, Chris Chelios of the world, Mike Modano's of the world, just really dragging Mike Babcock's name through the mud. But he'll be back in the NHL coaching the Columbus Blue Jackets. What do you think? How do you feel about this signing? I honestly don't mind it.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what he's produced, it's hard to argue. I mean, this guy had the Detroit Red Wings not only in the playoffs for the record amount, but also winning cups. So, I mean, it's hard to argue that. You see a lot of the other thing is like Babcock ate all that issues and all that trouble, the old school coaching. He's definitely not the only one doing it. And he probably wasn't the worst that was in the league and doing things in the league. So it's obviously a situation where, yeah, it wasn't good. But how about Columbus Blue Jackets and the coaching that they look to? I mean, they had Tortorello here within the last 5 years. Now they go to Babcock. You have Johnny Gaudreau, who's played for Daryl Sutter, and now Babcock. I mean, Werenski on the blue lines played for Tortorello and Babcock. Like, these guys are living in just the most old school coaching environments you could even play for. I think. I mean, I think it's good though. This is a young team. They're going to need discipline. They're going to need a kind of a tougher voice. So, I don't hate it in terms of what we're going to see from the Columbus Blue Jackets next year in terms of on-ice performance.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good for the Columbus Blue Jackets. I think it's going to help their team. I do think that Mike Babcock is a good coach. And obviously we know, you know, him firing, it wasn't the prettiest of sights. But, I mean, you look at this team, they do have a lot of talent. This Kent Johnson kid's going to be phenomenal. Came from Michigan. I'm interested to see how this Patrick Laine character plays under a guy like Mike Babcock, because we know that guy is – he takes nights off left, right, and center. Johnny Gaudreau, obviously, he loved Daryl Sutter. He's a guy who responds to those types of coaches. And they're also going to have a nice pick. They might get Adam Fantilli or this Leo Carlson in the top three. So it's going to be interesting to see what this team looks like. They just traded for Ivan Provorov from Philadelphia. Yep. So he'll go in there. And Zach Werenski, who missed almost the entire season last year – who knows? I mean, they're going to be in a metropolitan division that really is up in the air. I mean, that division out of all of them just seems like, even the full Eastern Conference, I mean, it just seems like it's really going to be hard-pressed to pick the top four teams in each of those divisions next year.
Yeah, I agree. And just touching on the Provorov, for people that, I mean, okay, so Flyers got a first and a second. Just to explain this, Philadelphia Flyers got a first and a second to retain a bunch of salary. This is a Arizona Coyotes move for tanking. I don't necessarily think that Philadelphia Flyers dominate this trade. Provorov is 26 years old, 6'1", over 200 pounds as a D-man. One of the most desired positions in hockey. Out of all D-men that played just 5 minutes last year at all, He was top 15 in ice time. He played all 82 games. He was top 15 in block shots, top 35 in expected goals against. Like, this is a very solid defenseman. He had 27 points. That's not his role. You have Johnny Gaudreau. You have Laine. You have Kent John. Like, he is not what you need for offense. Werenski will play power play, etc. Like, this is a very great trade. And the Flyers retained his cap. Like, this is a Columbus team who just got all the things I just explained about Provorov for less than his cap of 6.2 million or seven. So, like, I really like this trade for Columbus. I think that they are seeing themselves as a backdoor playoff team. And the only, you know what team this reminds me of a little bit is the New Jersey Devils. New Jersey Devils were putrid last year, weren't considered any playoff hunter at all. Make a couple offseason moves, get a little bit older, and they make the, they didn't just make the playoffs. They were second in their division. So, can I see Columbus Blue Jackets making the second wild card? Yeah, I think I can see it. I mean, they have a lot of talent. They had a lot of injuries. They were obviously tanking because they wanted to surround themselves with another pick when they saw was it going great. It would be tough. It's not going to be an easy route, but I could see it happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you there. So just noted, too, that Sean Walker and Cal Peterson, those are two throw-ins. Those are two solid young guys going back to Philadelphia. And with the Cal Peterson move, it sounds like Carter Hart it might be on the move. So it sounds like Philadelphia is not done. It sounds like Carter Hart could be dealt in the coming days, if not tonight.
They're tanking.
They are definitely
Carter
tanking.
Carter Hart is an elite goaltender. He's struggled in Philadelphia because the team's been that bad. Philadelphia Flyers were the fourth fewest goals for. No goalie is going to put up phenomenal numbers in the win-loss column in Philadelphia. Carter Hart, if you're a team contending, and I'm going to bring up I'm a Buffalo Sabres fan. You need goaltending help? I would absolutely consider us a very, very high contender to be a playoff team if we had Devin Levi and Carter Hart as our goaltending. So, their Flyers are tanking, and Carter Hart is too good to be on a team tanking. That's what this is going to come down to.
Absolutely, yeah. You think about Buffalo, it's definitely going to be a team. Ottawa is another team that has a lot of assets to move out. So it's going to be interesting. Toronto, potentially. So we'll see what happens with Carter Hart in the coming days. Lots of NHL news, lots of PGA news. Let's move into the halftime show, Justin. Two athletes, guess the athlete by their career accolades. And I'll start things off with you, Justin. Guess the athlete due to their career, or guess the athlete based on their career accolades. We've got a 6'2", 200-pound NHL hockey player. He was drafted in 2006. He's a two-time Olympic gold medalist and a three-time Stanley Cup champion.
Two-time Olympic gold medalist, so he has to be Canadian. Fire up. 6'2", 200, three Stanley Cups. Drafted in 06, we said?
Yeah.
And he was a – did you give me forward or D?
He's a forward.
Give me Jonathan Toews? Come on now! Come on now. I'm on the board with the one guesser.
Go!
Come on.
Let's go.
Come on, Jonathan Toews. Come on. All right, we got one for Greg here. Guess the athlete. We have a retired NBA player.
Sure.
6'5", 205. He's played 18 seasons. He was drafted in 96, round one, pick one. And he has two championships, no MVPs.
Wow. First overall pick, 6'5", two championships. Where am I going with this? Who won two championships?
He was pick five, correct myself. 1996, round one, pick five.
Okay. Two championships. 6'5". Gosh. We'll go David Robinson. I need more.
He played for four teams. His career stats were 18.9, 4.1, 3.4. And he was a 10-time All-Star.
Gosh. People are probably losing it right now. I'm stuck on the two championships. 6'5", played Go Ben Wallace.
Not Ben Wallace. All right. He started with, just going to confirm what I have written though. He started with the Milwaukee Bucks and ended with the Miami Heat. And he's a shooting guard.
Wayne, wait, no, Dwayne Wade did not start with the Miami Heat. Sorry. Richard Jefferson.
Ray Allen. Two-time champ. Ray
you
Allen.
You hate to hear it. I was going with guys that are a little bigger than 6'5". That's a good one.
Fair, fair.
All right. We got a 6'4" retired NFL quarterback. He was drafted in 2012. He's a four-time Pro Bowler. He was the NFL passing touchdown leader in 2014. And he has the most career passing yards by an NFL rookie.
What year is he drafted again?
2012.
Could you give me when he was drafted in that draft? You don't have to. I'm just curious.
I'm going to refrain.
That's fine. No. Okay. Fine. Yeah. And he led the league in passing TDs 2 years into his career. Drafted in 2012. I'm going to take a shot. No, that seems not early enough. Jameis Winston?
Not Jameis Winston. This guy is retired.
Correct. Retired. 2012. Okay.
This player played for one team during his NFL career.
2012 already. Andrew Luck.
Bang!
Come on now. Bang! Short career. Let's go. Okay. I have a active NFL player. 6'2", 230. He has zero championships. One MVP, two-time All-Pro, and he was drafted in the first round in 2018.
Can I get position?
Cannot get position.
Okay.
He has an MVP.
Who was an MVP if not? Cooper Kupp?
Nope. He didn't win. Did he win MVP or was he just Super Bowl MVP?
Super Bowl MVP, yeah.
Yeah. He's played for one team in his career. And he has, I think it's five records. NFL single season records.
Aaron Donald?
Nope. Last hint I'll give you is he is a QB.
Wow. What?
One MVP, two All Pros, one team. 6'2", 230 from 2018's first round with five single season records. Active QB.
I'm such an idiot. I'm not on my game today.
Last guess, though.
The small guy, NFL MVP. No Super Bowls. I don't know why Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers are just stuck in my head with MVPs, but give me, who is an MVP? Gosh, Lamar Jackson?
Lamar Jackson with the final guess. Come on now. He's got single season records in QB rushing yards, QB rushing attempts, 1,000 yard rushing seasons, most games with perfect passer rating in the same season, and most games with 100 plus rushing yards by a QB at 12. So Lamar Jackson.
Gosh, that's tough. Good work there, though. Good work there. 3 of 4.
Let's go.
Let's move into the NBA. We got some NBA talk. It's the NBA Finals, and we got Denver and Miami, and it's been an exciting final so far. In game one, I think it went maybe not as I expected, but Denver with a 104-93 win. Really, I mean, Jokic with a double-double at half. This guy is a walking triple-double. It's unbelievable what this guy does. 27, insane. 10, and 14. Jamal Murray backed that up with 26, 6, and 10. I mean, just had a great game. And it was really the struggle for the Miami Heat that we're having. I mean, Jimmy Butler only having 13. And you look at, Kyle Lowry was hot at points for that team. I mean, their stars were not going in that game. I mean, you've got to hear in the outline, Justin. I mean, you got Strus, Caleb Martin, Duncan Robinson, 6 points combined. It's just not great. So game one obviously goes to Denver. Game two, a lot different though. Denver struggled at times. They kept the game close most of the game, but just didn't really look like they had it. And it was a nice response from Gabe Vincent, who also had a great game one, and Bam Adebayo, who had a great game one, and Butler all over 20 points. And they respond with a big win. And they're heading home with a split series. How'd you feel about the first two games? I mean, it's outside. I think outside of the NHL, it's been a little bit more compelling.
Absolutely, and game one kind of went as expected. So, something to note here: Nuggets are undefeated at home until we had that game two Miami Heat win. So, for me, I was expecting that to continue. I didn't see Miami Heat being a threat. Obviously, game one goes, and Denver does exactly what's expected. Heat pulled that game to within 10 or 11 or 12 at the end, but that game was a blowout. So the score kind of flattered the Heat there in that loss. But what I saw was, and I saw it talked about after, is too, that Heat were running that zone that they were so successful in. Jokic was picking it apart. Jokic was able to obviously play make and score at will to whatever that zone was giving him. Heat changed that. I saw Kevin Love, a little bit more action on the defensive side of the ball.
True.
And the Miami Heat kind of found an answer from the three-point line that I think was the biggest difference. Those three guys we mentioned, Strauss, Caleb Martin, Duncan Robinson, 2-for-16 in game one from three. Game two, I believe they're 10-for-19, which is a big factor because when you watch this Miami Heat team, they only look like they're going to win games when those three or four depth guys, if you add Gabe Vincent in there, are splashing from three and they overwhelm you. They go on those runs from three and they make you feel like you can't do anything. But when those guys are missing so many shots from three and are not helping Butler and Bam Adebayo out offensively, then the Denver Nuggets are just way too good of a team to even let you hang around. So this series depends on two things for me. The adjustments game, which it always is. Can Denver now adjust to what they've seen from the Heat? And two, can the Heat three-point shooting be consistent enough? Because if it's not, you're not going to walk away with some wins. I think the Heat were able to do that earlier. If they didn't have the best shooting performance, they could still kind of hang around, maybe get the win at the end. Those are the two factors for me. I expect game three in Miami to be a response from Denver. I'm kind of in the feeling, Greg, I could see this series literally going win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. With just, hey, two great coaches. I think Spoelstra gets a lot of credit. Obviously, he's won more than Malone. I think Malone's a great coach. I think this is going to be just a back-and-forth adjustments game right now.
I'm just so fascinated by how Miami draws up just getting wide open threes. We've seen it series after series. It's crazy how they draw up these plays and get wide open shots from right on the arc. But yeah, I think Denver responds. I don't think they had their greatest effort at home, which is surprising. Like I said, their first loss at home this playoffs. But I'm still on Denver in a big way. I do think that they win this series, but you have to give it to Miami. I mean, they keep surprising people left, right, and center. You know, it would be tough for the fans of Florida to have a loss in the Stanley Cup and a loss in the NBA Finals.
It's like Philadelphia. The Phillies lose the World Series. The Eagles lose the Super Bowl. Now Miami might have to go through the same thing. But where would this? I mean, it's hard to just pick a ranking, obviously, just off the top of your head or even just a feel for it. Where would this rank for you for both Jimmy Butler, Spoelstra, and just the Heat organization if they pull off this championship?
Oh, it's big. It's big. It would be massive. I mean, Jimmy, you'd have to give Jimmy a lot of credit. I mean, obviously, he's the captain of this basketball team. And Spoelstra, I mean, this guy, I mean, you know, his legacy might be a little tarnished with, not tarnished, but, you know, you'd have to give a lot of credit to LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Shaq won that first championship with Wade. So, but yeah, to win with this group would be just monumental for their legacies. And regarding to rank, I mean, I don't know about ranking them, but Jimmy, I mean, automatically into the top 10 players.
Hall of Fame,
currently
for sure.
Playing Hall of Fame for sure. I mean, it's incredible, but he'd have to get it done, I think, to really get into the Hall of Fame conversation. But I think too, what Jimmy Butler's doing is, for a long time, this guy's name's been dragged in the mud, talking about how he's a horrible locker room guy, how he's hard to play with, how he draws all the attention. Doesn't seem like that's the case right now in Miami. So a lot of teams probably shaking their head for moving on from Jimmy Butler too. I'm looking at the 76ers.
Yeah, I agree. And the one guy that kind of I think about when I think of Jimmy Butler, if he wins this championship, Is Dirk Nowitzki on a little bit of a lesser level just because he doesn't have that regular season MVP and he wasn't with one organization, but like this is the same thing, dude. Like in terms of the path to the finals, you're talking about the Boston Celtics team that was absolutely loaded. The Milwaukee Bucks in round one with Giannis, and now Denver Nuggets with Jokic. Like, it is one of the more impressive runs we've ever seen. Like, it's crazy. I mean, it'd be impressive. But yeah, like you said, there's a very good chance though we see both Miami teams, or Florida teams, excuse me, with some heartbreak. Which, hey, we got a long way to go though. Only two games down, and no series has ever been crowned in the NHL or NBA after two games. So we'll have to see how this thing finishes off.
And that's a fact. But just finally in the NBA, Justin, it never ceases to amaze me how LeBron James just stays in headlines regardless of where he's at. He's been eliminated, got swept in the conference final. And, okay, so we'll talk about this. So obviously the retirement talks are going on. LeBron's being talked about. How the hell did somebody find out that Kyrie and LeBron are texting each other about meeting up, linking up in Dallas? Like who gets who's privy to that information? I never get how these headlines develop, but it is a headline and people are talking about a Kyrie trying to get LeBron James to come to Dallas. Absolutely obnoxious. But we're talking about LeBron James during the NBA Finals, which is not competing it.
Yeah. No, and what I don't understand, so I mean, I think LeBron is absolutely the one leaking that. I think he's got agents and guys around him that are absolutely trying to keep that going. If he's not in the finals, he has to be in the news during the finals. So my question is this, and this could be way off, tampering and all this stuff going on, like, is it just not – is this exempted for the players? Because, we're not even at free agency. We're not at any trade opening. Like, I just don't understand how this is something that's, like – it's like they bring it up in the news as if it's, like, it could happen tomorrow. It's like we're not even near any timeline of the NBA season where this can happen tomorrow. And we're talking about a mid-NBA final. So I don't know. But again, I don't see it happening. I don't know. I don't think there's a world where Doncic and Kyrie and LeBron is I don't know that Luka would even want that. Luka wants the ball in his hand. I don't even think he was that happy Kyrie was there on this team, let alone now Kyrie and LeBron, and Luka's got to kind of play like younger brother here. I don't think that's going to work out.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's Luka's team, like you said. I mean, like, how's he not involved in these conversations? But it's funny how LeBron James stays at the top of our kind of thoughts when we're talking about the NBA and loves to make headlines when he's not even relevant.
Luka could be sitting there. I wouldn't be shocked if this was happening. Luka could be sitting there right now laughing at this news saying, funny how that's going on, because I'm actually getting Kyrie traded right now from the Mavs, so I'm not really sure what he's up to. So I could absolutely see that happening.
Absolutely. All right, let's move into the final quarter here, Justin, of episode 69, season 3, the Intermission Podcast, and we got Jacob DeGrom. We're going to move into the MLB. Jacob DeGrom, obviously we know he signs with the Texas Rangers, but he will be done for the remainder of the 2023 season. He has had his second Tommy John surgery. I mean, this guy could have been one of the greats.
Yeah.
Could have been one of the great pitchers in the history of the game. And he's just been stunned with injuries.
In a way, I mean, he's shown that he is one of the greats. But in terms of putting a career together, yeah, it's just blundered with injuries.
It's insane. And I don't get it, Justin. And maybe you can explain this to me. But I look back and I look back at some of the greats, the Doc Holidays, the Roger Clemens, the Pedro Martinez, and the Greg Maddux, the John Smoltz. And these guys all had multiple 10s, 15s, 20s, 50 complete games. These guys were pitching 9 innings. These guys were pitching 8 innings. And now with all of the science, all of the information that these teams gathered, and these guys are pitching 4 or 5 innings, the injuries are through the roof. It's the softest we've ever seen baseball. The injuries are crazy. It's like, why were these guys back in the day able to pitch so much fine? And now you got guys like Jacob DeGrom going for a second Tommy John.
You're absolutely right. It's crazy because you think that it'd be going the other way. You think we'd be living in an era where DeGroms and Verlanders and everything could pitch full complete games all the time.
We're going
the
back
best
to
pitches,
back.
But
we're going
yeah,
back to back.
Literally, yeah. Shohei's going back to back, both at the dish and the mound. Yeah. The only thing I wonder is it the junk they're throwing and how hard they're trying to throw it every night? Like, is that? I don't even know if that's what it is.
These
but
guys,
I
mean, no, these guys aren't throwing exponentially harder than they were back then.
Yeah, it's which is also a separate issue, but I don't know. You're right. I mean, you put all this money into a guy like Jacob DeGrom and you don't have the facilities to maintain him, his health. Like you said, like they were able to do beforehand. There's no way anyone could justify why that is how it's going right now. Cause there's no way that this is what should be going on. You feel for him, you feel for the Texas Rangers who are having an unbelievable season. Now they lose him for the rest of it, but I just don't see a world where DeGrom's gonna play a full season and take a team to the World Series. I can't see it.
It's tough to see. We'll move into the Toronto Blue Jays world because some massive news dropped today, and we kind of foreshadowed this in the past. Alec Manoah's really been struggling. And he's been struggling so much that they have sent him down to rookie ball. Alec Manoah has been sent down to rookie ball to try to find his stuff. And, I mean, for Blue Jays fans, this is really tough. This is the guy you sent out in the first game of the season. This is quote-unquote your ace. And now he's been so bad that you got to send him down to rookie ball?
It's like, insane. What is going on? They didn't even send him down the road to Buffalo, the Triple-A ball. They sent him all the way down, which, hey, Florida. He gets to go to Florida. So, hey, good for him, I guess. But maybe it's just a bona fide vacation. How do we know that they didn't just say to him, you know what, Alec, like, you're not going to learn anything in rookie ball. Go take 2 weeks in at the beach in Florida and just come back to us better, hopefully. That could be what it is. I saw a video today. Just baseball fans, something like that. Give them credit. They're great baseball feed on TikTok. But they're talking about Manoah and kind of talking about how he was a top three Cy Young vote. They're talking about his weight, the pitch clock, leading to a big reason why he's walking a lot of people. So he was 260 all season last year. He's listed as 285 this year. Now with the pitch clock, they're talking
about... On his way to three bills.
Yeah, and they're talking about how some of these bigger guys are struggling with the pitch clock because now you got to be moving a lot more, a lot faster. You got to be reloading. They're all about throwing their heavy stuff and all that. And he's walking a bunch of guys with that speed and tempo, and they don't know how comfortable he is up there. And it's making him go to his fastball and slider, but in the zone, you got to cover the plate. If you're trying to avoid walks, you got to throw it over the middle of the plate, and that's hurting him. And his expected ERA is over six now, almost 6.5. Like, there's a couple things that we're seeing from Manoah that it's stuff that has to be fixed. Like, I don't know that it's a situation where he just has to go find his stuff. Like we were thinking, like maybe it's a little bit of like a rehab conditioning kind of situation where he's got to get into different shape and get this pitch clock thing figured out to be able to go the distance.
He's going to fast down in Florida and he's running on the beach.
Yeah.
4 hours a day in the mornings. And he's going to come back 240 pitching gas.
Yeah, can you imagine he goes down for like a month and he comes back just shredded 220, like just shredded 220, like a roll this Chapman, just throwing absolute 105s down the plate. That'd be insane.
He goes there. He's just been training with UFC fighters.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, unreal. Let's talk. I mean, it's been a great year for pitchers. And I mean, obviously Bassett's been pitching well for the Jays and Gausman. I mean, Gausman's been incredible and he's certainly in the AL Cy Young talks right now. Yeah. I mean, he's not right now going to catch Shane McClanahan, who's just had an incredible season, 9-1 right now for the Tampa Bay Rays, a 2 ERA. Like, that's just insane. But Gausman, I mean, 100 strikeouts. I do believe that leads the AL. Like, he's been playing well, man. And I think, you know, he's certainly at 2.76 ERA. He's been a bright spot in that rotation. You paid him the money for that reason to come in and replace. I always call tight pants R.A. Dickey. It's not R.A. Dickey. Tight pants. He's out for the year in Seattle. But he won the Cy Young with the Jays. And anyway, why can't I think of his name right now? But anyway, I always call him R.A. Dickey, and it's not. It's anyway. But the Jays do have some bright spots in that rotation, thankfully, because obviously we know with Manoah not performing very well. But what have you seen from these top pitchers in the AL?
Yeah, it's a good group. Obviously, we're talking about McClanahan on Rays, Sonny Gray on the Twins, and Gausman on the Blue Jays. And it's funny to talk about Gausman here as number three. Like, a big selling point for him is how much he's pitched and how much the Jays relied on him, which obviously, as Jays fans, we take a look at because of how bad Manoah is. Which, when you look at the overall layout of the team, if Manoah could have just been anything near himself from last year, we'd be looking at a top three Cy Young and a top 10 Cy Young, which would have this team probably up there in the division. But yeah, it's going to be, I agree with you. I don't know that it's a race that Gosman's going to chase him down. It's going to have to say, McClanahan's going to have to come down, but he had such a good year last year. Even like this was something that he was due for. I could see this kind of being something that is kind of set already, and he's going to run away with this thing. This Rays team has shown no sign of a fluke of a start.
43-19.
Yeah, it's amazing. If he say I want that team to stay healthy. I'm not a Rays fan, but I want to see a team like this that's not a Yankees, a Dodgers, a Boston Red Sox all the time, and like they have those great moments for those teams to be great. But I kind of want to see something like this. I was hoping the Mariners were a team, Padres. Like I love seeing these new faces, not just like make a playoff and burn out, like have an unbelievable season. Like that's what baseball has some critiques is like you could just buy your championships with their cap stuff to being different. Like to see a team like the Tampa Bay Rays be an absolute juggernaut. So I'm all about this team staying hot.
No, absolutely. They've been fantastic. And the Jays right now remain 3 games back of the wild card, 9.5 games back of the Rays. So we'll keep a close eye on that. Interesting news. Albert Pujols was named to be a special assistant for the commissioner of the MLB. I'm not really sure what that title entails, but obviously one of the greats of in recent history in the MLB. So I don't think that could be a bad decision. I think that's going to be good for the game moving forward. And they've made a lot of changes. I mean, we look at the professional leagues and the Big Four. I'd say the MLB has made the most changes to their game in the past, 4 or 5 years. And I think these changes are helping out the game.
Yeah. And I think the only thing to talk about Pujols is I hope that he's a voice for between maybe the players and the commish, maybe a little bit more of a direct voice from the players PA to the commish. So I don't know. I can't imagine having Pujols there is a bad thing. So yeah, I mean, interested to see what he kind of takes over or not.
No, absolutely.
I haven't heard of that position before in sports, to be honest with you.
No, neither have I. I mean,
from a former player, especially.
Yeah, it'd be nice if we had a guy like, you know, we think about Jonathan Toews step up and be Gary Bettman's right-hand man. You know,
just
that connection, like you said, to the commissioner. But, no, it's been fun. I mean, the MLB is alive and well. It's buzzing. I mean, we look at the divisions, man, and the Pittsburgh Pirates, the NL Central, having an incredible season. The Arizona Diamondbacks are leading the NL West. Like, these two teams, out of nowhere, and we talk about the teams that do all their heavy spending. I mean, you know, we look at the Mets in the East, like these teams that have just spent all of this money in the offseason and they're struggling out of the get-go. And you get these teams with payrolls of fractions of the amounts and they're balling. And I think that comes down to just, you know, having the team and you know, having that culture and having the guys just gel together, bringing it every night and you know, guys stepping up, guys that may not be big names. It's just, it's been unbelievable to watch, you know, the D-backs and Pirates, especially just having great years.
Yeah, D-backs is unbelievable to see. I've yet to been a baseball fan and see this team be competitive, and now they're winning a division that entails the Los Angeles Dodgers and the San Diego Padres, who I don't know these numbers are coming off the top of my head, but I gotta think they're spending 4 to 5 to 10 times more than the D-backs are spending, and I don't know that they can hang on. But we're now sitting here 70 games in, 60 games in, and they're number one still. And they kind of were throughout the whole time here. It's not like they just had a 15-0 run. Like, it would be something to see a playoffs where you got the Pirates and the D-backs as the division winners going in. That, I mean, it'd be something to see. We have a conference finals of, like, Rays, D-backs, and Pirates all in. I don't think that's happening, but can you just – what a spin it would have been from last year. And I got three teams listed as just shockers that we had high expectations and we saw great things from last year is the Cardinals, the Padres, and the Mariners. They're not even – they're on the outside looking into the playoff race, let alone who many people thought would be perennial divisional winners after what they showed last season. So – exciting to see the MLB have this kind of turnover because it's kind of known as a league, like I said, with the juggernauts or the juggernauts. But we're kind of seeing that shift a little bit, and I like the competitive nature of the league right now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been fantastic. I mean, we look – the Padres are probably the biggest surprise. I mean, just spending money that we did not know – that was unimagined. And just bringing in guys, be like, how are they doing this? And they're struggling. So you can't buy your team, it's exciting to watch nevertheless. But – Justin, it's been an absolute blast as always. Everybody, we apologize. We're going to move to one a week, so we'll be coming at you most.
Yep.
Well, as I'm on the road, we're going to kind of do as we can. The content will be sporadic. It's just going to be, you know, another week of just off and on kind of doing our thing, but we've got plenty of stuff coming. We've got some exciting news in the NFL fantasy realm, some major news.
Yeah. We'll get to that later. I got one other thing to, I just want to pitch in. We mentioned on the chalkboard, Instagram, follow us on the Instagram, the Daily Intermission Instagram, get in the chalkboard, whatever you want. Sports are winding down. The finals are winding down. We want to get more connected with you listeners. We want to get more connected with you followers. Give us hypotheticals. Give us draft scenarios, trade scenarios. Give us would you rathers. Give us topics to talk about. We're going to do, we'll do a segment. Maybe quarter four, we'll do, it's the mailbox, fans, from the listeners, whatever it is. Yep. Give us the craziest things you want to talk about. Aaron Judge playing in the Saudi Soccer League. Whatever you want, we'll incorporate it in some sort of way. Maybe we'll get right into those debates, what have you. But just give us any hypotheticals you have. Give us. Send us your fantasy trade. Send us whatever you guys want to do. We'll have a mailbag, and we're going to put no restrictions on this mailbag, I think, Greg. We're going to let quarter four. Quarter four is going to be a pretty interesting topic.
From the bag.
Don't hold back. Send it to the DM the Instagram or get in the chalkboard. And, yeah, hey, nice talking to you again. And couple, let that road trip enjoy yourself in Toronto there.
Absolutely. Let's rock and roll.